Hello, hello, everybody. It's been quite some time. Thank you for your patience with me, and thank you for continuing to share the podcast, listen to the podcast, and send me encouraging messages on Instagram and Facebook and through your emails. I really appreciate you. I'm here with one of the most profound podcast episodes I've ever recorded, and it's profound in so many ways. I'm so happy to introduce to you Hanin Saba and Miriam Termelin. They are two women from the Middle East, one Palestinian, one Israeli, working together towards peace. I'm going to read you their full bios. I'm just going to say them out loud so you hear them, because it's important to understand their history and how they're now working together, which is rare and difficult in this time to be peace activist. So this is about Hanin. She was born and raised in Gaza to Palestinian Falahi refugees. And Hanin, and you will be able to sense this from her words, experienced life under siege, occupation, and patriarchy. And despite that, her dream of freedom persisted. So she grew up amidst conflict and near-death experiences. And through that, her connection to life deepened, especially after she became a mother to her two children. As an activist in Gaza, she advocated for peace and nonviolent resistance. In 2018, Hanin participated in her first peace conference, where she called for peace for Palestine and Gaza. She's connected to a community of peace builders, and she found that in order to support that, she had to leave Gaza and continue her peace building work from outside. You'll hear in this podcast that her sister and family were still in Gaza and were able to, and this is a beautiful outcome, with the support of many friends from around the world, able to leave and go to Cairo. So they are safe now. You won't know that if you just listened to the podcast. So I'm glad to give you that good news right now. She believes in the importance of inner healing for collective liberation, and you're going to hear that come through too. She incorporates movement, voice, listening, interaction, and that everything she does is rooted in love and based on intuition. Now, Miriam was born in Nazareth to an Israeli mother of Jewish roots and a German father with a Christian background. And with that, she grew up between both cultures and lands and knew from a very young age that she herself was an outcome of peace and love between two nations who were enemies. She was called to become a peace activist in the Holy Land. So after studying holistic art therapy in Vienna, she incorporated dance, movement, improvisation, voice, and shamanic practices into her peace work and dedicated her life to that work. She creates spaces and ceremonies for healing and transformation. She calls herself a spiritual midwife through the passages of life between birth and death. The two of them are creating an event in Greece, and the link is in the show notes for this podcast. It's called Uniting in Our Humanity, and it's May 30th through June 5th. And you can check all of that out and check out Hanin's Instagram and all of the work of Hanin and Miriam and the way they come together in courage and in peace. There are strong moments of tension in this podcast where, and honestly, one of them was my misstep. So if you listen to the end, you're going to hear me call myself out on something. And that was informative for me. I will look forward to hearing from you. Please email me. Please message me on my socials. And let me just say that you know why you're here. You're here to disrupt materialism with me. And what is war, if not the most atrocious, terrible, devastating form of materialism. So thanks for tuning in. Welcome to That Good May Become with me, Lara Scappaticci, where we learn to illuminate the esoteric in our everyday lives. Hello, Miriam and Hanin. I'm so feeling so fortunate to have both of you here. I've heard so much about your work, and now we're together. We just got a glimpse of each other with our cameras, and we'll turn those back on later to share the three of us together here. One of you in Portugal, one of you in Jerusalem, and me here in California. Mm-hmm. This podcast, just so you know, is really about disrupting materialism. And that force of materialism is, I sort of describe it as the force that tricks us into believing that the physical, what we see, just what we see here, is more important than any other thing. So, for example, it would be power is more important than love. Land is more important than the human beings. And so that's what this podcast sets out to do. So that's why I ask each person that comes on the podcast to just talk about a spiritual experience or encounter they've had in their lives, whether that's through the work you're doing now or something that happened in your childhood, anything you want to share. So yes, maybe we can start there and then we can share your work with everyone. Yeah. How's that sound?
Hanin, do you feel like starting?
I can start, sure. Well, the spiritual experience, I had a strong spiritual experience with the medicine plant, ayahuasca, and I was in the middle of ceremony. I was doing healing work from the experience of living in Gaza. It was specifically to that place, to my relationship to that place, my home place, because I was having a lot of dreams and nightmares of war and the near-death experiences that I had. And in the ceremony, it was all coming strongly together. The pressure of the sounds of the bombs falling and the experience of like not finding some sense of safety. And then I was out in nature and there was like this big tree that was like big oak tree right next to me. And then there was a light from the sun that was shining through me. Through the tree, the big tree. And in that moment, like there was this complete moment of surrender and to receiving the light and the healing of it, and this reminder of like that I am not there in that experience. And from that experience of like not being there anymore, to be able to look at it and let it go and work for something that is I experienced, which is the light through looking into the dark places that comes when we are daring to face, and how connected it is to not only the personal healing, but also the collective healing. And in that moment, I opened my eyes widely and I opened myself to the light to come through me. And then I sat under the tree and I was meditating for light and healing of the land of Palestine and of all of us who are living on the land, and everyone, including the ancestors, including the mothers, the children. And this is connected to my peace work activism, the nonviolent path, because in that moment it struck me, it was very clear that I am going for this path of healing to my inner and to the outer and to the collective, and how what we do impacts the collective as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I know that those experiences with the plant medicine are particularly helpful with trauma like this. I actually have some friends whose family members are Holocaust survivors, and they talk about the plant medicine all the time in relationship to trauma. So it's interesting how that light and that connection to nature put you so closely on this path and allowed you to release, it sounds like. Am I getting that right?
Yes.
Sum up. Yeah, that's really beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. I can picture the light and the tree.
Thank you, Hanin.
Yes.
I'll share an experience I've had actually in the very beginning of my time getting to know Hanin. It was, maybe we'll share later how we met, but it was right after we met online. That we had an invitation to a soul reading by a friend of us, a shared friend, and she invited some peace activists to participate in the soul reading. And in the soul reading, it was the first time I saw Hanin beyond the identity. I mean, it was a very first time I got to know her, but I could see her on a soul level as a soul I acknowledge in a way. And in that moment, I mean, even before she got in my heart, but in that moment, I felt like a kind of allyship or connection that is beyond time and space. And I'll share about the soul reading that I got in that soul reading. Like, each of us got a soul reading and we all listened to them, to the stories. And my story was about it was taking to past lives experiences that are relevant for this life, our life's purpose and serving for peace. And it took me to a reincarnation in Congo, in which I was a boy that was in a diamond mine in the darkness, all days going down the mine to dig in the dark for diamonds. And the thing that helped me to survive was my skill of imagination. I have goosebumps sharing this, because while I was in the darkness searching for the diamonds, I was imagining the daylight. I was imagining the beauty of the sun. I was imagining the beauty of Earth when all is blossoming and the daylight shining on the beauty of the Earth. And that kept me surviving these conditions. And why I was shown these circumstances in that past life was that also in this life, I am skilled with imagination and I can see things that are beyond the darkness of our times. And I'm actually holding inside me the images of a life I would call it like the Garden Eden that is possible, the beauty of Earth that is possible when we live in peace with each other and with the land. And it made so much sense to me because before I was told that soul reading, I had these images and I was doing a lot of dream work and I knew I have this ability, but I was never told, you know, this is your gift and it's important. You're holding something that is crucial in this time and it can help others to be inspired because I can hold on this vision. It serves me also in going through these dark times that we're facing now. And it also is like a pole for others to relate to come back to believe or to even hope that a life of peace would be possible. So I wanted to share that experience because since then it really went with me. It was like as if I got a permission, or not even permission, as if I was told, this is so important that you hold that picture for and that image for Earth and for the Holy Land. And since then I'm walking around and I'm going to caves and I'm seeing beyond the darkness, and I'm more and more aware of it, and also bringing that those images into life, creating spaces where we can see, or where we can where I lead also people to imagine and dream. So yeah, that's why I felt to share this experience. It's very much related to what I do today.
That's so beautiful. And, you know, that what a powerful soul reading. And the thing is, I feel like you're both carrying these imaginations, you know, that came from these spiritual experiences with you every day to sort of buoy you through these, through the difficulties that you see around you with the people you love and your families and the places you're from. Every day you're carrying that light or that picture of peace, a Garden of Eden in your heart and in your consciousness. And then carrying each other, a real person with you as well, you know, to show that that's possible. So thank you for both so much for sharing those really powerful experiences. And that makes sense to me because you're powerful people, and what you're doing is it's revolutionary in many ways, in the most beautiful way towards peace. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for sharing those. So can you tell me a little bit about the work that you're doing right now with each other and any resistance you faced? I don't think folks here will have the history as much. So maybe you can share a little bit of that. And if we want to turn cameras on, I think we can do that. I feel like that it's pretty stable, but it's up to you guys.
We can try it. Yeah.
Yeah, let's see what happens. It's nice to see each other.
Like we were in the dark and we needed to imagine. Yes. It was just the right
now we
time
can see.
To share it.
Nice with Mariam sharing, because we were going into imagination journey. I can answer first if it's okay, Mariam. I can start a bit about like with me, and then I can share a bit with Miriam, and then also, of course, Miriam can share from her side. Well, for those who don't know me, my name is Hanin, and I'm a Palestinian mother from Gaza, from Palestine. And I do activism work, nonviolent work, advocating for peace and justice and equality, because I do believe that we all we can live together, but it needs to be equal rights for all, and it needs to include everyone, the peace and the freedom, and not. And from that, I was working as an activist in Gaza, like I was writing with We Are Not Numbers, and I was doing translation work in the Great March of Return. I was doing activities in Gaza related also to nonviolent resistance, taking people at the border, sitting with them, encouraging for nonviolent approach. And what brought me to be doing this, it was meeting Miriam a few years ago. Like, she started to learn Arabic with me. I also teach Arabic online, and we started to weave in together, like that I teach her Arabic, and then now we are starting to have more and more collaboration. And what made it really special for me to meet Miriam is first is her heart, just as a human being, beyond the identities and where we are from, just her human heart that is full of love and compassion. And from that place, it made me feel really safe with her to share and to not only teach her Arabic, but also to start to become friends and share and exchange with each other. And in the recent atrocities that are happening in Gaza, through the what we see, the violence is breaking through a lot, and there's so many people killed, so many people displaced, so many people out of having any sense of safety or even reaching for food. And in this, when we see such a situation breaking through in front of our eyes, in front of our screens, I was really busy with the question of what can we do to stop this? Like, what can we do? And it was very clear, like, not to be engaging with the separation, because everyone, there's a lot of separation and polarization happening now. And it was important for me not to be part of that separation. And of course, it needed, it's really related to also who's the person that you don't want to separate from as well. Because if it's someone agreeing with the army acts and the war situation, then we cannot really actually have a conversation. And with Miriam, I never felt that way. It felt like that she is really against the war situation and have been supporting me to help my family even to survive the war situation and all these atrocities. And it has been feeling in a way, not only the support that she was bringing emotionally and financially to my family, but also the support of the togetherness and creating the vision together that we need each other in order for peace to come, that we need each other. Without being with each other, it cannot be. And without freedom and equality for all, it cannot be. This is something that is feeling very strong for me to share. And in the last months, we have been having podcasts and interviews together, sharing about who we are, what are we doing together. And it's feeling like this is the moment to keep weaving these lines together. And even though there's genocide happening in Gaza, and without each other, we will not be able to stop the war and the violence that is happening towards people. And I want to share a little bit about our project that we will co-facilitate together in Greece. We will be doing like a retreat for Israelis and Palestinians to share the pain and grief and work together in creating a vessel that is for healing and togetherness and uniting in our humanity, uniting people in their humanity too, and connecting to these values, very important values that bring us together. And we can share more about it, Miriam, maybe, or something. But this, for me, this meeting, it's really about like addressing this, like not only like first to heal, to work together, to grieve together, but also to address all of these different dynamics that are creating this situation in the land, like this different dynamics and not only the separation, but also the systems that are creating these kind of points of separations. And it feels that it can all come together, like the healing, the grief, the medicine, the addressing the different dynamics and the different levels of where we are coming from, all of us coming and weaving these different threads and lines together. And I want to just share one last thing, because I feel like I am not giving enough space now and to speak about Gaza, but I really want to share that the situation in Gaza, like for those of people of hearing us, is catastrophic. And I really urge people to do what they can to support, to stop this war, because it's really, really taking more and more lives and taking more from us than ever. And it's basically, it's really a human issue. It's not about Israelis, Palestinian. It's really like a wider thing, because if we are allowing this to happen to Gaza, then tomorrow it will be in a different place. The day after tomorrow, it's allowed to happen to anyone if we are allowing this to happen to the Gazan people. And this is about touching upon this, like connecting the dots into our, to the whole world of what is happening. It's really an example of what is happening. And it needs to stop, because people in Gaza are tired and exhausted and just really want to live in safety. And I believe every human, all of us, need to have that right. Yeah. Thank you. I'm not sure if I covered everything, but that's what came out.
No, thank you. And I mean, again, you craft these beautiful images together of your hearts being connected with this thread, and how that is the thing that will, that's what you need to create peace and change, is your two human hearts. And that's a really powerful image. And talking about how this conflict has the potential to happen any place in the world, and those tensions that build up and the forces that come in, those negative spiritual forces that take over, or just negative, you know, materialistic forces that take over, can erupt in any location. If we are allowing it to happen here. So thank you for saying that. And it does need to stop. And so I'm glad you're working together. It's such a shining example of what's possible between two human beings. And there's just more division everywhere in the world right now. Yeah.
Yes, so I resonate a lot with what Hanin said. And I also see the tragedy. I just want to add one more aspect, that the tragedy of Gaza, maybe in comparison with other places of war in the world, is that they cannot flee. They are in a cage for almost 2 decades, and they cannot go out unless they have the means. And even then, they need to wait. There's a big waiting list, and they need to pay lots of money that they don't have. Everything got taken from them. Not only their freedom, but also their belongings, their houses, their food, like shelter, anything that basic humans need. And they cannot go into safety. They cannot go away to a place that is safe. And this is inhumane in the highest level, baby. I don't know any other level of inhumanness. At least let the people go. So that is heartbreaking. Yeah, that's one point I wanted to add. And as I'm talking about this, I feel so much grief and pain for all the ones that are in pain now. And beyond the forces that are playing the war, the forces that are in a way wanting the destruction, each of the other side, most of the ones that are being killed are innocent people who wish to live in peace, peace activists. Today, peace activists were bombed by mistake. And my heart is just crying so much. And the only thing that gives me comfort is, the togetherness that Hanin was mentioning. Even now, even more, I feel everything that I built before, to be in relation with my neighbors. Even now, like, my work is mainly with my neighbors. I'm surrounded by Bedouin villages. So I'm a, I didn't introduce myself properly, but I'm a, I'm a descendant from my mother's side to Jewish, Israeli Jewish nation. And my father is a German Christian. He married my mother and came here. And so I have a wider heritage. But I live here most of my life in the so-called Holy Land. I prefer to call it Holy Land. It has so many names, and that's one of the struggles upon this land. And I refuse to struggle upon it. I believe that we all belong here, and there is. It has been sad circumstances in which I got here. Sad for some people that lost their homes. So my grandparents, as a part of the Zionist movement, came here and started inhabiting the land. And I am very sorry for everyone that lost their home and their belongings back then already. And with that being said, there is also a way that I can see, with all that pain, that I feel the blessing of me being home again. And me, I say for myself, but also I know many Jewish people relate to this place as home. And it's not at any way justifying the way we came, not at all. It's just I feel home here more than anywhere else, and as this is my home, I acknowledge also that it's a home for others, for the Palestinian nation, and I am looking for ways of how we can be her home together, because I don't see any other future, not for them, not for us. And if we go back out of this them and us, then I can see that in our roots, in our origins, we are one family. And that makes me even more sad that we treat each other like this. So that being said, back to what I'm doing today is I work a lot with my surroundings. So I'm actually working with Bedouins, my neighbor village. And that's also how good it is that I'm studying Arabic, so I get to know the culture. I can much easier work with my neighbors, and they are like, I work with people that are actually traumatized of war. Most of them men traumatized, having been soldiers from the Arab society. It's very complex to explain, but I'll leave it like that and just say that I know, meeting those people, I know from first sight the damage of war on people that are surviving. I know it also on a personal level of my grandfather, who was killed in war, whom I never met, and the loss of my family. And I know that war is only. Like no one wins from war. So I'm engaging now these days even more. Like since the war started, I'm even more involved in peace projects than ever. I was always, since I remember myself, but now it's like I'm called to so many works, like the gathering that Hanin was mentioning. I'm involved in a program for a leadership connected to the heart with Israeli and Palestinian together. I'm connected to grieving circles, creating grieving circles for Israeli and Palestinian women, now also on a bigger gathering for like more than 100 people. So the work is really calling me everywhere where I can bring myself, my blessings, my gifts. I'm coming and supporting. I'm also creating art that speaks the language, universal language of love, of peace. So soon there will be out a video dance for life, which is our statement that we choose life in times of war. Yeah, and I'm a spiritual midwife. I support in the passages of life and death. So now also I support a lot, actually both. I'm supporting a friend, Palestinian friend who's going to give birth. So I will be there. Actually, a mixed baby. The father is Jewish. So I'm in this field and I'm surrounded by a community of amazing, amazing people. And I want this the world to know, because it's very one-sided. When we listen to the media, we get really only bad news, almost. And I want the world to know that there are many people, and still are, people that choose a life in peace in the best way they can. And I do want to say that this war brought a lot of a lot of breaking the trust that was before, that was built over time. And for many, many people, they don't see hope anymore from both sides. It's very, very heartbreaking. So many people that maybe had still belief that it's possible, they doubt it now. And I'm sure they doubt it because of the brainwash on both sides of the media that really show only the bad things and only one-sided perspectives. So each feels the enemy is the worst and no one to talk to. And I'm very sorry for that, because when you see me and Hanin, you don't understand who is the enemy. Who is the enemy? It's not like when we meet each other, when we can sit and talk and listen to each other, when we can acknowledge each other's pain, the enemy disappears. It's the enemy is a story. It's a monster we created. But in reality, like, coming back to what Hanin said, if everyone will get equal human rights, who will be the enemy? There will be no enemy. Yeah. So maybe I said enough. I said a lot. Thank you for listening.
No, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I don't know, Hanin, if you want to respond at all to that as well, because I feel like the local work, like you said, you're working with your neighbors. That is where, that's sometimes the only place we can do the work when there's division like this, right? And so, you know, again, I have a friend who is doing some reconciliation work. She's been leading these peace circles and she's Jewish. And sometimes people will come to the group and become so angry that there's even talk of peace, or that there's two sides being presented, and then she has to do this this work to help people see, you know, there are two sides to this, and there's something beyond the two sides, which is what I hear you both saying. There's something that goes beyond, something that goes so strongly beyond the division that is carried in the human heart. And that doesn't negate the genocide that's happening right now. So we would have to be super clear on that. It's not like all flowers and peace signs and beauty. It's not. There's death and destruction happening all the time. And how do you carry? You said people have lost hope, and that is such a scary situation, such a terrible situation. Because then you can't. How do you carry any other image inside yourself when your hope is gone?
Yeah, I just want to add something to that what you shared, Laura. It's like it's very hard to ask people to be hopeful in these times and believe in the bigger picture. Because, for example, me and Miriam, like, I can hold this picture because I'm based in Portugal. I left Gaza 5 years ago, and I'm not in it. But when I'm in this genocide, surviving for my life, trying to just barely make it, I will not be able to see this picture. And I say here because then we need to consider that the Palestinian community is facing a lot of restrictions on daily basics in their life, like very basic things. You have full restrictions control in West Bank, checkpoints and everything in Gaza. There was siege. And people did not have a chance to be able to see another perspective. Like I only had this chance because I left, because I again, because it's really a key point to be able to be in a place that is feeling safe, to be able to feel, how can you see through things, no, if you're just surviving? And it brings us back to the power dynamic, and it brings us back to the system that is building these walls and this separation and the oppression. And then once these walls are removed and everyone is living equally, there might be, there can be a chance of hope and people seeing the same way, no? Because it's a really tricky one. Like, for example, like when I lost my family members, like my cousins, they were killed in this war. My relatives, like more than 72 cousins and relatives died in this war. And I really, at some point, I was like, no way, there is no peace. Like, it cannot be. Like, I really went into a really, really dark place of losing my hope, losing connection, also losing connection with friends, because I couldn't find any way of dealing, of holding these atrocities, this violence. And it was hard to see through the peace in that moment. But I think I shared a bit of how I went back to that process. It was after medicine circle. We held a medicine circle for Palestine, for Gaza. So it was specifically for Gaza, actually, for that place. And in that moment, it was also very clear that I need to, that there needs to be coming back to the heart connection and really seeing through things. And
That's the walls of separation. They really are called like separation walls. And they are like they're walls of fear that we have built in the past decades. And I believe that that's another thing that prevents us from meeting each other, really, because the only ones that we meet are those that are really the enemies that are killing us from both sides. So one time, a long time ago, like 20 years ago, almost 19 years ago, I was in Amman in Jordan, and I was going into a shop, and there was a guy whom I asked where he's from, because he didn't look local. He was actually blonde. And he said, guess. And I was getting all the guesses that I couldn't guess. And in the end, he said, I'm Palestinian. I'm a refugee, Palestinian refugee. And he started sharing his story and how he hates Israel and Israelis. And I was like swallowing, like, ooh, what shall I do now? And then he was asking, so where are you from? And I'm like, okay, guess. He couldn't guess. And then after I told him I'm Israeli, actually, and I asked him, do you hate me now? And he was looking at me so surprised and like, no, how can I hate you? I've met only soldiers that were against me and they killed my uncle. And so like he was only having bad images and he couldn't see the human because they're all in uniforms. So how could he not hate? And now suddenly he saw a human so he could connect to. And I told him, you know, there are people like me, Israelis like me. And I mean, most of us have been soldiers at some point. Me not, actually, but most of the people are going through this brainwash. Part of the education, part of the whole system is indoctrinating you to go this path. And if you're lucky, you're not going to kill in this time and maybe have only an office job and still participate in cooperating in this system that is protecting the civilians. So also protecting, I'm doing like this because people really believe this is our protection and we wouldn't survive without having an army. All the nations, Arab nations are against us and we are Holocaust traumatized and this whole story is building so up that we are like the ones that need to protect ourselves with all means and everyone just wants to kill us. And we haven't healed the wound, the trauma of the Holocaust, of our own history. And like this is repeating itself again and again. And I'm saying this with a lot of compassion to my own people, to my own nation. We need to heal. We need to heal so our deepest wounds, and then we can meet each other as humans. I can meet the other and not as a someone who wants to kill me, but someone that is just making their living, just wanting to have a good life. And when I can meet the other beyond these walls, when I can actually see them and get to know them, then we can lift those walls. We can start building trust. So it's also about our inner healing, taking responsibility, and also really being curious about the other. Let's not go to the stories of that are feeding the separation continuously, and now even more, like the monster got so big that it's so hard to imagine that this is actually a human being behind. We cannot see the human. It got so inhumane. And still behind those layers are people that really want to protect themselves, that want a life in freedom and safety. And they just follow the ways that they know. And again, not justifying, and just calling back home. I say back home to the deep knowing of that we belong, that we have a place here, and that we need to acknowledge each other so we can really have a place here in safety with each other. There is no other way. Like, we can keep fighting forever, but it would just cost so many more lives and so much more pain. And the only way for securing the future of our children and the coming generations is to find a way how to manage to live next to each other and acknowledge and each other's existence. No other way. Yeah. So I was part of a gathering, which was called Gaza is Here, and was a gathering of peace activists close to the border to Gaza, which actually is close to the kibbutz Be'eri, which was destroyed almost fully on the 7th of October. And we were camping there, like, really close to the border, and we were activists, Israelis and also internationals, who came to actually be and make a connection to Gaza and Gazan activists as well. And we were there for a weekend, and we were dreaming for peace, like inviting visions for peace. And and then there was also one Palestinian with us. Worth mentioning, because it's hard. Like, it's in an Israeli territory where Palestinians cannot enter without permits. Anyway, so we were there, and then the activists from Gaza, they couldn't join because the Hamas figured out that they are planning a meeting with Israelis, and this is normalization and not tolerated, and they got threats if they participate, so they canceled. And we were like, oh no, now we cannot connect with Gazans. And then Hanin, maybe you can share how you get to know about us and how you came in.
Yeah, I can share. Thank you, Miriam. So there was this Facebook post, randomly, super random, like, I was just cooking in my kitchen some bamia for lunch for my children, for my two kids. I have two kids, and I was looking, like, peace in Gaza or connecting with Gaza, something like this. I don't remember the exact words written, but something in my heart resonated of connecting to people who want peace for Gaza, because in that moment of my life, I was not seeing that the world wants peace for Gaza, because I was living under siege, under bombs and war. I was really not seeing that. And I wanted to connect to that part, to feel hope again, and to voice my people's stories and struggle and daily life. And naively, it was not intentional because I did not know that Hamas was telling the activists not to join. Naively, I pressed interested and I wrote the organizer. Her name is Emma Shamba. And she is a good friend of mine also who supported me to leave Gaza. And I wrote to them that I can speak to you. I want to connect. And then in that moment, I connected with them on Zoom, online. And I spoke about Gaza, about myself, about the hope for Gaza, about how much people in Gaza want to have a safe, peaceful life and the struggles that they face. And this is the moment that we connected, Miriam and I.
Yeah, I remember your home in Gaza from the screen. Yeah.
Yeah, because it was not safe to speak with Israelis. When you're in Gaza, you had to do it like really secret, very hidden. Because whoever gets known to be spoken to Israelis, then you're a normalizer. You're putting yourself, your family, everyone in danger as well. Yeah.
Can you say more about this word normalizer?
So normalization is like normalizing relation with the occupation in a way. And it has different dimensions because there can be normalization with the Zionist, for example, the people who really like just want Israel and nothing regards of Palestine. I would say normalization. But if it's someone who is not agreeing with this and wants freedom for Palestinians and equal rights and everything, to me, in my perspective, this is not normalization. But in Palestine, for example, in Gaza, at least, it was considered that anyone contacts Israelis is someone that is making the relationships with the enemy normal, which was not normal because it should not be normal to have any relationship with the enemy because they want to erase us, they want to kill us because of the fear, because of the political situation. I don't know if I'm describing it, but this
that's,
at least...
No, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I, that word and...
I was saying that I'm not a normalizer also because I don't speak with Zionists who agree on genocide. It's like, so it's really have different dimensions of what we mean. And I cannot, for example, as a Palestinian, say no to someone who's with us, with the freedom, with equality for all, who's working for this too, because this is, it doesn't make sense in my mind, like to say no to this kind of human being. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, thank you. And you're right. Like when we get a label like that, then it doesn't allow for any layers of complexity. It's like you do this, then you're this, right? Yeah. And I mean, we have that in these small degrees in the United States too about different things. And
they generalize about all Israelis are, or all Palestinians are, or all Gazans are Hamas. So we can kill them all, right? Or we can throw them all to the sea, or that these slogans that they are saying, and they don't accept that there's a variety on both sides and not all are the same. And it's generalizing and keeping those walls straight so that we cannot really see the other.
Hanin, how about your family that is in Gaza? What, or I don't know where else your family is in Palestine, but what is happening there?
Yeah, I have some family in diaspora, in Libya, and a little bit in Jordan. I'm not connected to them anymore, actually, because we lost connection somehow over the years with my grandfather's sister. Mm-hmm. But the rest of my family and relatives, they are all based in Gaza. And as I mentioned earlier, I lost nearly 72 members in the atrocities and the genocide. And they are dealing with the situation now, just like anyone else, surviving, finding ways to not only survive genocide, but finding ways to deal with the grief, to handle the survival, to handle also the logistics of daily life, which is nearly impossible under these life circumstances and conditions. So all their life and reality has become like a big hustle of just surviving, finding food on the table, finding clean water to drink, and being able to just live through day by day. And I have to say, it's been really, really heavy for me to not only grieve the relatives who were killed, but also grieve the family, my family home, which was destroyed, my parents' house, the olive growth that we have. It was all bombed by an F-16 rocket. And it has been really heavy to deal with all these pain that they are handling right now. And they have been like sending me text messages of like, this needs to stop. Like we really want to get out of here. And also I have some of them that already want to leave, and we registered them through Hala Agency, which is an agency in Egypt that charges money to be able to cross the border. Rafah border. So already many of them are thinking, considering to leave, and the ones who are surviving, I'm supporting them with the support of Miriam and other friends to survive this, the war. And like, I have friends that have been telling me of like the horrific scenes that they have seen and witnessed themselves, and how it left them completely speechless, and how this war, with all, like, I've lived 4 big aggressions, and how this by far is the worst one that people in Gaza have ever had to endure and go through. And yeah, my family is surviving. That's what I say when people are asking me. They are not okay. They are not okay.
Yeah, thank you. And my question is always like, doesn't everyone, when you tell this story, I imagine my house bombed. I imagine my children in peril. I imagine witnessing that on my little suburban street right here and what that must be like. I can't conceive of someone that couldn't just put themselves in that situation and have empathy immediately. Like that to me is that is the human quality of, yes, you imagine if I couldn't make any food for my children today or the next day or the day after, or I walked outside and saw someone murdered in front of me, or my house and my land was bombed, you know, the things that sustained my family. So I don't know how, I keep thinking like, how do we bring that closer to every human heart so they see that this anywhere is not okay, and it's happening en masse right now to thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people. But I guess people could say, well, I had a friend who stayed at a kibbutz in Israel, and you know, she had this really beautiful experience. And then sort of at the end of the conversation, she said, oh, but they just see Palestinians as dogs. She said this to me. And even though the people not at the kibbutz didn't have this, anybody else on the street, there was just this. And I heard you say this, Miriam, I think, or maybe you said it, Hanin. I think it was you, Miriam, in this other podcast I listened to with you, that they don't see Palestinian people as human beings. And then we just talk about like, this is exactly what happened in the Holocaust. That is the exact thing that happened.
The dehumanization.
That's it. And you are at the counterforce to that, the two of you and the work that you're doing.
We have a list of 300 names that comes out of people crossing from Gaza. And every day I go through the list, 300 names, to go to see if my sister and her family name is on the list. And it's not there on the list, not yet. We're hoping in the next week. And the anxiety of just waiting. Your whole life is depending on this thing, no? Like, that's just this moment of freedom and wanting to be able to live and breathe. There's a lot of an anxiety around that. Absolutely.
Yeah. And like you said, Miriam, this trapping people is so inhuman and unfair. You don't even have the chance to say, I'm going to walk away from this. This is the most painful thing I have to do, but I'm still able to just go live somewhere else if I have to, which is horrible as well, to leave your home. But yeah, well, I will be praying for your sister, sending that, imagining her name on that list with you, using that power of imagination. Yeah. What is the possible thing that we can do, I can do to help you, that people can do in our day-to-day lives? Is it in our conversations, from the smallest thing to saying, you know, to speaking out, or the biggest thing that we can do? Can you, any ideas there?
I invite people and I urge them to speak about the situation of the people in Gaza, because we're not talking about just a place somewhere, and it's lives. It's not like, it's people's lives, and people have to understand, like, it's family. Imagine, like, now it's a holy month of Ramadan. Next week is Eid, our big holy celebration. And people in Gaza will not be able, it's like people enjoying Christmas, spending it with their friends and family. Like, imagine that people in Gaza will not have this possibility to have these gatherings with their friends, with their families, with their loved ones, or in their own homes. They have lost completely everything. And to voice that and to be connected to that, I want to invite people and to support Gaza in some people think, what can I do? I'm just one person. Said few million people, like, we as people can create seeds, can put seeds. So I want to encourage people also to keep putting seeds. If it's helping a Gazan in a campaign to leave Gaza, or if it's helping a charity that works in Gaza to support with food, or if it's helping to voice the situation about Gaza, and mostly to voice, not separation, and to try to be encouraging that everyone deserves to live in peace and harmony and have a life. And as I said again, seeds. We all put seeds. It's not about like I don't see myself exactly making the bigger change now, but I'm working towards the bigger change now. This have implications on the bigger picture. And so that's what I want to encourage people, the imagination and the vision.
The best thing people can do is not to take sides, because this is continuing the story. And we want to create a new story, not the history and that of the past. And the new story, the story of peace, would be a story in which both people have a home here. And for that, we need to stop taking sides, because that will not make us equal. And then always we have someone to blame and someone to defend, and it's just ongoing. So if you can encourage yourself and others to, I'm speaking to whoever is listening, to find compassion to all humans and see their humanness and their needs and their struggle for safety, actually, like in the base, in the very base, all to be safe. So to see that, even if the means of how they are trying to get safety is maybe horrifying, not maybe, it is indeed very, very tragic. And yet, in the base, this is what we need all. And so to see the humanness and promote that, promote solutions or try to find ways of conflict resolution that includes seeing all and seeing the pain and the trauma of both people, and how we can take responsibility in healing, each of us, not only the Israeli and Palestinian. It's all humans. We have the responsibility to heal our trauma, to heal our wounds, to see our pain, to see the pain of each other. So that's one thing that's on a personal note. And then, of course, whatever you can do to share that message with others, either through writing or sharing or events or support with fundraising events to really care for those that need now the basics for survival. So also Hanin and me, we do fundraising events, or there are many organizations, peace organizations that really need support always. So you can always find a way of how you can contribute, either with money or with words or with your heart and with your prayers. Everything is good. Yeah. And just a few more words to the gathering of in Greece. That so first, also we invite people to join who are identified as Israeli or Palestinian, but beyond that, are identifying as humans and wish to unite in their humanness. And then also we are fundraising also for that, to enable people to join. So that's another way to contribute for people who wish to heal. And actually do the work of healing and coming together and creating another future, and putting those seeds that Hanin said. Yeah, and so there are many ways how you can contribute. I think I mentioned enough. And yeah, mainly also stay with the image that it's possible, because now it's so hard to imagine. And I encourage, coming back to my story from the beginning, that we imagine it is possible, that we keep that dream alive, and that we create peace in all our relations. That's global, international, the way we can contribute.
That's right. Thank you. And you know what? I just want to go back to something I said, and I want to make sure that everybody has all the information about the May gathering, but I think I actually did something unhelpful in this podcast when I talked about the dehumanization and what my friend saw, what she heard someone say about how people were treated, because then I could feel in myself that I wasn't including the Israeli people who are working towards peace in that. So I want to just flag myself for that, because I could feel that inside myself, and I think it's so hard not to, you know, being someone that, you know, whose father's from Syria and seeing how Middle Eastern people are treated, but that's not the right thing to do. So thank you for bringing that back, of holding this encounter you had in the grocery store, or the two of you working together, or what you're doing in your neighborhood, along with the activism to stop the violence, and hold that imagination. So I just want to call myself out there, because I think I went off a bit, and I could feel it come into my body, and it's
very human. Yes, that please. We are influenced by such images or people sharing with us, and then immediately we have an image to it. And I invite us, when it happens, because this is also human, yeah? We are surrounded with so many things that are coming and here. So when it comes and you notice, like now, then just make the transformation. Raise the dog, like the one that is not human, raise him to be in his dignity again. Like, change this image. See him as a human. See him as worthy. Just a thought. Thank you.
And raise the person that I feel is judging and calling the person, you know, like raise them into the humanity too. That's both. That's where I was struggling, right? Because I can't believe a human is a dog.
Just again, like the way we perceive things and what we say and what we mean with it, but then bringing back dignity and the beauty of it.
Thank you. I am just trying to understand about the dehumanization part, because there is a fact here that Palestinians are being dehumanized, but I guess you were trying to call out for you being not or what I just tried
well,
to understand, because here it is a fact. Palestinians are being dehumanized by, at least in my world, because you don't see someone as human if you do this kind of actions to them, no?
But right, exactly.
What do you mean by that?
Well, in myself, I felt hatred towards the Israeli people in that moment.
Okay.
And right, for doing that.
Okay.
And for having that perspective of Palestinian people. That's what I felt.
Okay.
I mean, so what I was saying is that that's not helpful either.
Yeah.
Like that hate in any form is not helpful.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. Now I understand that.
And, right. So that's where I felt in myself, like that anger rising up, and that hatred's a really strong word, but like just disbelief. And that's okay. But to add to the fuel of anger isn't really the thing that's going to be helpful. And that doesn't mean that we don't protest loudly and call a cry for peace and a place, a home for everyone, but ask to end the violence. But if I'm coming from a place of hatred, even if it's in a way not correct, but it's based on the facts of what's happening, it's still not okay to come from that place, is what I was trying to get at.
Thank you for explaining.
But anger, it's really a fuel that is very potent. So when we feel it, it's like our love, like something is very precious to us. So we are angry when it doesn't get seen or heard or treated with respect. So in that sense, we can notice our anger and then, okay, what are we fueling? Am I fueling now the hatred back, or am I taking this and say, I care so much, I don't allow you to treat me and my people this way. And I can direct it in a way that is building instead of just making more destruction in another direction. Another thought to be inspired. Anger is a very strong fuel we have.
Right.
And we don't know how to use it. That's why it's getting to aggression and violence.
Right.
And nonviolence doesn't mean to be weak and not act. No, it means that we choose the action to fuel our with our anger, with our frustration, with everything that we're facing, and we choose to build with it something that is constructive, that can bring a future, that can bring change. Yeah, that's very important.
I just feel so grateful to both of you for being in this space with me. Thank you for saying yes to this. Thank you for the work that you're doing. I'll be thinking about you both now. I have this experience of connecting, and we'll just be together now, because as human beings, we can do that, whether we're with each other or not. So thank you so much. And I'll make sure that everybody has the information that they need to get to your gathering, right in the notes, and any other information you want to share, just send it to me and I'll get that included, because people should be supporting. They have the opportunity to support something real with real people they know now from this conversation. So
thank you, Laura, for having us.
Thank you.